Hello and welcome to another edition of Fusion International Film Festival podcast. This is Dan and I'm joined by my co-director, Steve.
Howdy.
So following on from our last podcast, obviously in the current situation, we just want to take the time to be able to sort of do a few sort of different things. And we had the idea that we just wanted to take a few moments to do over the next sort of few weeks, different podcasts and countdowns. And we wanted to start off with our top five favourite films, not necessarily going to be winning all the different Oscars, but films that sort of inspired us or been our introduction to cinema or hold a personal memory to us. And going forward, we may be looking at different directors and actors and performances. But yeah, just want to get straight into it. I haven't got a clue what Steve's drafted up, and likewise, so it could turn out that actually I go, oh no, that's what I've picked, but it's not an issue because clearly it was an influential project. So I want to jump straight in. And in this episode, we're going to be listing our number five and number four in the countdown. So without further ado, Steve-O, join us. And hello from a distance.
Hello. Socially distancing and going. As you can imagine, this is devilishly hard. Anyone who ever asked it to do these lists, it's incredibly difficult. And I could just look at my Blu-ray collection and go, oh my God, that could be it, that could be it. But I've made a decision. And number five for me would be Blade Runner, and for all sorts of reasons. And funnily enough, I was watching two other 80s Harrison Ford films over there, which I love, which is Witness and also Frantic, which I adore. But this is, for me, the best of his words. It's obviously a Ridley Scott film. Groundbreaking even now. Incredible direction from Ridley Scott straight off the back of Alien, of course. The futurist design, Sid Mead, Philip K. Dick, who's the author I'm a massive fan of, can watch it now, and it still stands up as one of the best films ever made. I don't really need to say too much about it, I don't think, because it's one of those films that most people have seen, and it's very difficult to argue what a influential and groundbreaking piece of art and cinema it was. And really, it was Ridley Scott at the top of his game, and it's just a perfect example of how you can make a brilliant looking film, and it's just pretty much flawless for me.
Oh no, absolutely, I agree. I mean, I remember when I was studying film, we studied Blade Runner, and the one thing which everyone couldn't get their head around at the time was because, as you mentioned, Philip K. Dick, the original title, is it like it was something, Dream of Electric Sheep?
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, yeah.
And people are going, why didn't they call it that? Well, think of the marketing exercise, like, and yeah, you're absolutely right. The whole style and vision, and especially, obviously, I know that you're a big sci-fi fanatic and you love all of that, and obviously Rutger Hauer as well. So I haven't seen the latest version with, was it Blade Runner 2?
Yeah, 2014. It's very good. Denis Villeneuve, who directed it, is a really, well, he's another great director. It is very, very good, and I think it is a great homage to the original and actually gets close to being as good as Blade Runner. The look of it, the style of it. It's a really good film, but it's not the original.
But of course you'd expect it to look the part now, all those years later, given the amount of money that's available. Whereas then back then when the original's made, it's almost the style of the set, the quality. I'm just remembering, obviously, Harrison Ford at the time was sort of hot property. And
he was, yeah.
You're seeing it. So what was the, I can't even remember, what was the year of release for it?
82.
82. And obviously then that was,
I think so, 82, 84, 92, yeah.
Yeah, and bringing it out. So ultimately,
I think it's before, I think it's before he'd done Raiders, which I think was 84.
I was going to say, it almost felt, I wasn't born till the end of the 80s, but I just remember it was a case of dipping in and going from sort of one project to another and all these sort of different roles, and he was really sort of the A-list of what was coming out, Star Wars, and then obviously onto Blade Runner, Indiana Jones series, and as you mentioned, Witness as well.
It's a great film. So I watched that and Frantic the other day, and I just remember they're such great films, and and they're both in their own way. But yeah, it is a struggle, mate. So come on then, what's your number five?
Right, okay. So number five for me is a Stephen King adaptation, and no, it has not got a scary clown in it.
No, and I'm pretty sure I know what it is.
And it's a film which I think everyone will see. Oh, it's not just a guy film. The film is Stand By Me.
Stand By Me?
Stand By Me, yeah. It's...
Oh, that's interesting, because I thought you were going to say Shawshank.
No,
yeah, great film.
No,
great
not,
film.
Yeah, whether it's not, yeah, Green Mile or Shawshank. No, Rob Reiner's Stand By Me from 1986. So it came out a year before I was born. And I just want to start off with this. The opening monologue by Will Wheaton's character of I was 12 going on 13 the first time I saw a dead human being. And then when so that's the opening part. And then when the film's coming to its finish, it then finished with the line, I never had any friends later on, like the ones I had when I was 12. Jesus, does anyone? And they're sort of two book endings to then a film which you just look at and go, oh, is it a group of friends on a journey to go and find a dead body, or they believe someone that's been hit by a train. But actually the film is so much more than that. And I love the outdoors, and even it's the simple jokes, you're looking at these, and actually the majority of the cast, from John Cusack to Kiefer Sutherland, who plays the bad guy in, as it were, and Will Wheaton, they've all actually from then, bar see the late, and I really enjoyed River Phoenix, went on to actually carve Hollywood careers, which not obviously to the highest levels. I mean, he had Corey Feldman in it, that then went on the next year in 87 to do Lost Boys with Kiefer Sutherland, and obviously had sort of an up and down Hollywood career. But no, for me, Stand By Me is a film which you almost look at and go, wow, I wish I almost had that sort of adventure as a 12 or 13 year old, and the friendship, and it's got a complete combination where you laugh at some of the silly little Vern's, Jerry O'Connell's character Vern, where he's just wanting to eat all the time. You can always go, yeah, I've got that one friend. So then actually you cry with emotion. You then rejoice when it's all sort of this heartfelt, and then you feel fear. So it takes you on a full roller coaster of emotion. And just the outdoors, which is where I love to be. And you look at it and think it is friends asking each other silly questions, the fear of trespassing and breaking into somewhere and being somewhere you shouldn't. And actually, probably quite relevant now in the current climate, is just peeling back and not necessarily having all the sci-fi. It's sort of like a little character study in human interaction, human behaviour, and how something can just bring you all together. And for me, I just remember seeing it and then later in life now looking and going, yeah, I never had those true sort of journeys, and you're almost envious of all the characters in it and what they did get to achieve. On set, imagine how much fun it would have been filming it. And so, yeah, sadly, River Phoenix then 6 years, I think it was 93. Yeah. Like, he had Hollywood's at his feet.
At his feet. I mean, he was about to do Interview with a Vampire.
Yes.
And cast for that, obviously died, and then he was replaced by, who was he replaced by? I'll think of it in a minute. Do you know, the name's gone, but I can see his face. But yeah, he was replaced last minute, obviously sadly passed away.
But yes, it's one that, again, that's always, and especially then when you see his brother, Joaquin Phoenix, obviously recently Oscar winner with The Joker, and how he went on, and look and think, if there was two brothers side by side conquering Hollywood, it would have been quite something. And yeah, just for me, obviously it was my own Private Idaho, referencing Phoenix's performance, but yeah, Stand By Me would make my top five, just because, again, 30 odd years ago, but you can just still look at it and just get lost in it and enjoy the journey. And it's not just a guy's film either. I think it's a film that female audiences can enjoy as well. Obviously it is male led, but it's still just got a purpose, I think.
No, it's a great choice. And funny enough, my number four, I think, might have a double connection to Stand By Me, because my number four is Jaws. And because Richard Dreyfuss is the narrator, I think, in Stand By Me, isn't he? I seem to remember. And the reason I love that film is not to do with the shark, Although obviously that's the driving force of the film, and obviously the music and everything else it's famous for. But it's actually to do with the comradeship of the three leads, which for me still gets me every time. The Indianapolis speech that Robert Shaw, Quint's character, delivers. And it's funny because I can remember vividly going to see it. I would have been nine. It was an A certificate, or then PG, not double S. A lot of people think it was, but it wasn't. And I remember going to see that and how shocking it was and how brilliant it was. And it kind of stuck with me. So you could say it's one of those kind of life-changing films. And it really is. It's an absolutely brilliant film, but mainly because of the interplay between the characters, all of their strengths and weaknesses. And there's so many stories associated with that film, which obviously now is not the time to go into it. But yeah, it's an easy choice for me. And I know it was probably, for me, still Steven Spielberg's, my favourite Steven Spielberg's film, with everything he's done, including Schindler's List and the Indiana Jones films, Private Ryan, Endless List, I know. But yeah, I can still remember, as I was yesterday, going to see the film at my local cinema. So as I said a moment ago, it's a really easy choice for me. And although I said earlier, oh, well, I struggle because, you know, he's done so many brilliant films. But the truth is that I think for all sorts of reasons, Spielberg was really hungry at the time. I think he'd just come off of Duel. I don't know if that's a film he'd done directly
Dennis
before.
Dennis Weaver, yeah, what a great film.
Yeah, what a great film. But I know it was an absolute... I mean, I've seen the documentary, the hour-and-a-half documentary that's on the Blu-ray a couple of times, and you just realise how tough it really was. And I think everyone, or not everyone, a lot of people thought this film was going to be a disaster. But obviously something was right because it all came together. And I know the studio... So I think it was Universal that released it. It was one of those first tentpole movies, probably the first one where they opened it on multiple screens, obviously saw something in it. And it just went mad. It went absolutely ballistic. And like the jump scares, you know, this is an example of how it stuck with me. But as I said a moment ago, it's not about less to do with the shark and more to do with the comradeship. The bit with the head in the boat, which I believe was actually filmed in a swimming pool because they'd done it as an add-on after they finished making the film, and I can still remember it so vividly.
So where were you though? So just jump in. So this is what I always find fascinating. You see on these different shows, and obviously you're a few years older than myself. So where were you? What location were you when you went to the cinema? And you say you were 9 years old.
Yeah, 75 it came out, I think. So, yeah, I would have been nine. Dreamland Cinema, which was a cinema in Margate.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if it's two or three screens, but it's closed down. There was talk of them reopening it. But, yeah, that was our go-to cinema. And, of course, in those days, when it's in the middle 70s, mid-70s, it is the mid-70s.
That's mad to see Dolby that film at 9 years old, though, as well.
Like, yeah.
Was that one of your first films you've ever saw at the cinema, or were you seeing
it? It's the one that... I'd seen probably things like Bambi and stuff like the usual stuff that kids went to see. But if you was asking what's the first film I vividly remember, it is Jaws. I'm saying there's certainly other films I saw before that, but I can't remember them. But that one was groundbreaking.
Do you want to know the first film I ever saw at the cinema? Was Jumanji on the weekend it came out. Robin Williams, Jumanji.
Oh my God, I saw that on Netflix last week. Was it Netflix or Amazon Prime? I can't remember, one or the other.
Yeah.
It's still a decent film.
I loved it. And obviously, again, as I think we've mentioned before, the sadness of Robin Williams. But seeing that, my childhood was very much the Jack, the Flubber, the Mrs. Doubtfire. And yeah, Jumanji was the first film I saw at the cinema. On the weekends, it came out, actually. So yeah, mid-90s.
Yeah,
but I think Jaws, again, it's an iconic film. It's... like we've obviously potentially a few of the films we are to discuss, it's got its own place in cinema history. And you can always go, oh yeah. And like from your point of view, you can remember when you first saw it and the emotions that it still evokes now.
Yeah, it does. It's just so, so vivid. And I remember I was there with my family. I went with my mum, stepdad, and I think a brother and sister, or brother and two sisters, I think we all went as a group. But yeah, it's, it's really quite amazing how easy I remember it, and it's obviously a long time ago. But it's it, again, as I said earlier, you know, it's I could watch it now easily, put it on, just spin the disc. In fact, I think it's on Netflix. So there is nothing to add to it. It's a bloody fantastic film.
Well, I best wrap up our five and fours with my number four. Now, already looking ahead, and this is one where I had two films in this possible place. And I'm still unsure where I'd go, but I think I'm going to say that number four for me is The Matrix. 1999, I mean, the Wachowski brothers at the time, but I feel they're almost like sisters now. I think it's Lily, I want to say Lana, which was formerly Andrew Wachowski, but that's by the by. I think it's a film which, again, when it came out, it was wow. Just for the music, the choreography, the sort of the CGI, the Agent Smith, and then actually the whole red and blue pill. Could we truly be living in that world? And I know that's one where you can go down some rabbit holes and have some deep thinking conversations, but I look and think The Matrix is a film. Truthfully, the sequels would never sort of stand up for me. I don't think they sort of work. The Matrix can act as a standalone project, which makes you question reality, existence. And actually, just for then, a film to see the ordinary office worker of Neo's character, to then how you can just sort of be thrown into this whole world and arena of unknowns and be made to question everything, which actually as humans we are made to do. And I think films, obviously, sometimes you can watch a film and obviously the ones we've said, Stand By Me, Blade Runner, Jaws, now The Matrix, you're going, well, actually, yeah, they've always sort of got a moral goodness about them, or that moral questioning. And actually sometimes it's good just to watch then a no-brainer film, which is what your Jean-Claude Van Damme and Steven Seagal cinemas for, where you can just sit and not have to do anything other than just chill out and watch something. But yeah, I think when it came out, The Matrix was groundbreaking, just at the turn of the millennium, when no one actually knew what was going to happen, when it went from 1999 to 2000, and how the change was going to come. And yeah, I just remember seeing it and the dodging the bullets. And then again, 20 years later, what Keanu Reeves is doing in Hollywood, the John Wick series, which you and I absolutely love.
Here's an amazing fact that Keanu Reeves and Nigel Farage are the same age. Which one of those two have aged better?
Wow. Obviously,
that's
yeah.
That's true, yeah. They're exactly the same age, well, not by the day. Everything you were saying about The Matrix is spot on. Number two and three were just new speak, gobbledygook, if I'm honest. I mean, who actually understood? I doubt that even the Wachowski brothers, as were, knew half of this new age speak that they were coming out. It just didn't make any sense. But number one, the first one was absolutely brilliant. And you can make brilliant sequels. I know the rare, you know, there's only a handful of
Godfather.
Toy Story. Yeah, Godfather stand out. And actually the John Wick ones, the trilogy, are really good. And I just think it was a cash cow, and it's a shame that they did it that way. Now they just cocked it up. But Bullet Time, remember when you first saw that, and the lobby shootout? Oh my God, I've never seen anything like it. Yeah, and it's just, again, an incredible standout film. I was in Maidstone and I bought the DVD unseen. I hadn't seen the film at the cinema. I just bought it on the... I'd heard all about it, and so I've got to get it, and I did, and it was it's a stunning film.
I just remember, because that was at a time, and again, and I want to say it was there or thereabouts when Gladiator was out. I think Gladiator was 98, 99.
Yeah.
I recall, or maybe just early 2000s, but it was just that time when cinema, and I remember it was, again, it's not just the film itself, it's the personal message, myself and my brother, and had it on VHS, we had the posters up, I think then on our computer desktops, we had the sort of the falling digits, the green, the bars, and everything just kind of brought in. And then that feeling of listening to the soundtrack, which I remember, and
the Nokia pop-up banana phone. I own one of those.
Yeah, that's it, the phone's on there, and then actually just the movements and everyone going, oh, I'm going to try and do the hold me here and do the bullet dodge. So been a sucker for nostalgia and then tailoring that with cinema. And I think everyone can say, yeah, you know what? I remember when The Matrix came out. I remember still now the... And I tell you what, one of the things, if ever you see a woman in a red dress that stands out, immediately you go, oh, it reminds me of that scene in The Matrix, which it does. It's always, there's elements of cinema which stick with you and evoke memories. And yeah, I think, again, we'll get to when we come to the other podcasts, are finishing it off. There's other films that you look at and go, yeah, that could have had a place. But I'm quite excited to find out what's made your 3, 2, and 1, Mr. Steve.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough choice, and it could have easily been all sorts of other films, you know, that I could have mentioned, but it just, you've got to make a decision. And funnily enough, when I've spoken to filmmakers about this and we talked about it, and I've said, oh, I can choose 5 films, but I'd be hard pressed to put them in any kind of order. Pinning me down to 5 favourites has been really tough. I knew the number one instantly, but then, you know, obviously we can get to that at a later date. We will get to that. But the other 4 above it were like, oh my God. And then, as I said a moment ago, you just go from my rack of films that I own and just go, well, that could be it, that could be it. And then there's films you forget about and you think, oh my God, why didn't I include that? But it might be easier to choose 5 films that I think are appalling.
Yeah.
You know, to be frank. But it was difficult. And it's good fun doing this, though, Dan.
No, definitely. So, yeah, that's just going to wrap for now. Just a sort of a Dan and Steve in conversation. And we'll come back with the next edition, which will be looking at our films, which we ranked in 3rd and 2nd place, before we then finish with an in-depth chat about our number 1 picks and how they sort of influence, inspired, and have had an impact on us. So thanks for listening. Keep safe and well, and join us again soon.
Yeah, take care. Bye. Thank you.